You're listening to Potty Mouth Radio, the home of movies, music, television, and comedy.
And now, the hunt for the perfect album.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to The Hunt for the Perfect Album with Billy and Dave. You're with me, Billy, and him, Dave. How you doing, hey, mate?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on the magnificent artwork I gave you to listen to.
This is going to be fun. And for the first time ever, we have a new setup where we'll be able to play the songs in live, which I think will be fun for reacting to them and stuff.
You're so clever.
So, you did give me last week an album. The album that you gave me is 10987654321 by Midnight Oil. You said commonly referred to as 10 to 1, which completely makes sense.
Just 10 to 1. Or 1098. So, take your pick. We're Aussies, we shorten shit.
I'm assuming that you are a big Midnight Oil fan, or is it just this album for you?
Ooh, early Oils. I mean, I don't think the Oils ever went off and got crap.
Yeah.
But they did get sort of, I guess, more mainstream.
Yeah, okay.
They were always political. It was the you know, Garrett particularly obviously always had a soapbox.
Yes, of course. Yep.
Messages he wanted to get across. But those early albums, particularly 1098, but Red Sails and the Sunset was the other one immediately after this.
Yeah.
That they were too cassette tapes that I was very fond of at a very young age. 1098 might have actually, I don't know, it may be it was certainly one of the two very first tapes that I ever owned myself that I sort of requested from a birthday or whatever. It was either that or ABBA by ABBA. One of those two albums was were the first and the other one was the second, but you know, They were, early fell in love with that album.
Yeah, nice. So, I mean, as you said last week, Midnight Oil, fairly big band. and they never really waned in popularity as far as I understand until they virtually stopped. And now obviously Garrett is a full-blown Polly.
Yeah.
So like I mentioned to you, I had seen them live, in fact, but I'm willing to bet that there's probably not a person in Canberra around my age who didn't see them live. They played a show at the opening of the National Museum here. It was a massive outdoor gig. It was them and Killing Heidi, and I went for Killing Heidi. Yeah. But so of course, so I saw them, but like I said to you last week, I've never listened to one of their albums in entirety. And so going through this, there were three songs that I recognized and two that I would say I knew quite well. But outside of that, I'll tell you one thing. What I learned listening to this album is that I actually know very little about Midnight Oil. I had them pegged even stylistically as what I thought they were. This album is fucking all over the shop, man. Like, they are very experimental musicians.
That's why I like these early albums.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, yes, they were one of that staple group of pub bands in the sort of pub band heyday of Chisel, Oils, Metal as Anything,
yes.
Ice House,
yes.
Fucking you name it. They were in that lot.
Yeah.
But they were a lot more experimental and a lot more interesting, I think, musically in those early albums.
Oh, 100%. I'll tell you one thing.
You know, they then evolved, obviously, into just a straight Aussie rock band with heavy political messaging. And they're more sort of famous stuff like Beds Are Burning and all that sort
of
stuff
of course.
That came later. It's fine, but this early stuff I really like.
I'll tell you one thing. They're much stronger musicians than I thought they were. Like, stylistically, some of this album has more kind of in line with a band like Tool. Like, they really play with their time signatures. They play with their instrumentation. It's really all over the shop. And I think that is why some of this album works really well for me and some of it doesn't.
It's one track, and I won't jump to it, but there's one track I'm super interested to know what you thought.
Well, we start off with Outside World, which is an interesting opening to an album. And I was really torn on this for the longest time. It's very atmospheric. It's very shoegazy. And then the vocals kick in. And it's like, well, this is like if Billy Bragg tried to write a shoegaze song. I can see you rocking along there, but that one little drum fill is about as heavy as this song gets. It does.
You know, you're waiting for that In the Air Tonight. Going,
But that little drum fill is about as heavy as this track gets. And apart from that, it's like, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like if Nine Inch Nails wrote a song that was all synth and Billy Bragg performed it. That's what that track is like. And so some of that I kind of dig, but I didn't get into it. I listened to this album 3 times the whole way through, and that was one track in particular where no matter how many times, it just didn't ever grip me, which is a real shame for the opening track. It's not. No, I'd never heard that song before. See, so was that a hit for them?
I wouldn't say it was a hit. I believe it was a single. That's where it's interesting with the sort of decade or whatever between our ages. It's probably more than that, but I'm not going to embarrass myself. where stuff that I know really, really well and think of as kind of like, you know, that's a household name. Everyone knows that. But it's because it was just, I mean, this is back when, you know, FM or even AM radio was the only source of music.
Yeah.
And there were no streaming or playlists or any of that sort of stuff. And so you just got inundated over and over and over with songs when an album was released. And obviously Midnight Oil, this was, I mean, Red Sails was kind of the big one, but this was kind of their kickoff album where they really, you know, this album had a couple of monster hits on it, which are probably the two that you know really well.
Probably, yeah.
But probably the first 2 or 3 tracks on this album were all in heavy rotation. So Outside World, the next...
Only the strongest track two. And I liked that one a bit better.
Not Only the Strong, but
because the third track is Short Memory. Yeah. And that was the first track that came on where I was like, yes, I know this song. Yeah. This song was big.
Conquistador of Mexico, the Zulu and the Navajo, the Belgians in the Congo, Short Memory, plantation in Virginia, the Raj in British India, the deadline in South Africa, Short Memory.
And not only is that the first song that I recognized, it's the first song that I really liked. I think the chorus is really catchy. That Short Memory must have a... And that's what I think of as Midnight Oil. Like when this was the first song that stylistically I was like, I can see who they still were in the 90s and stuff.
I get, Only the Strong. I mean, I like every track on this, but Only the Strong is... It may be my least favorite.
Yeah, okay.
On the album. I think it's one of the weaker tracks insofar as there are weak tracks on what I think is a fucking good album.
Well, it's really interesting. The album is called 10 to 1, and for the most part, that's the order I would rate the songs in, I think. I think that the album, I think, and maybe it was more...
That's really interesting.
Maybe it was me more acclimatizing to it. You know, I've said this analogy before, like when you're a kid and you taste mustard sauce for the first time, you're like, that's spicy. And then you grow up and you're like, no, it's delicious. And I think that maybe that was a little bit of this for me, where they are so stylistically diverse and very different to what I was expecting from the little I knew of Midnight Oil. Like that I think it took me until the end of the album to kind of get my feet wet and jump into the pool and go like, I get this now. And I think on future re-listens, my ordering might change, But on the three or four times I've listened to it, definitely it gets stronger and stronger as it goes to me. Because Midnight Oil, like you said, they're very political. They're effectively like, lyrically, they're a punk band, and stylistically, they're not.
Like, yeah. I mean, every song is either about First Nations people and mm-hmm. Aboriginal rights, or it's about the environment, or it's about both.
Yes.
apart from maybe Red Gum, they're probably the most political band Australia's ever produced.
Yeah, 100%. So then we get into track four, which is Read About It. And this is the other one that I recognized.
Yeah.
Was this one a big hit as well?
Yeah. Short Memory and Read About It both were very strong singles from Memory off this album. Neither of them are the two biggest hits.
Right.
But
okay.
Hits.
I mean, I can have a guess at what the biggest hit is, and we'll get to that later on. But I liked Read About It.
Literally two of Midnight Oil's biggest ever hits are on this album.
Okay.
But we haven't got to them yet.
Right. Nothing ever happens. Nothing really matters. No one ever tells me what am I to know. So what am I to know? Read about it. Just another incredible scene. I liked this one a lot, actually. I liked this one a heap. I think this was the first one where you can, I think, when I think of Midnight Oil, I think of whatever that percussion instrument is. I don't know if it's like it's almost like banging on a tin can.
It's some Aboriginal stick hitting a didgeridoo or something. You think of that and you think of Peter dancing to it.
I liked that track a lot. I tell you what I didn't like, though, is the next track, Screamin' Blue. And I spoke before about how stylistically diverse Midnight Oil are. And part of my issue with the, like, again, I didn't hate any of this album. I liked all of it. But part of the reason I can't point to any tracks that I particularly love, there are moments on this album where I had a very hard time differentiating one song to the next. And Screamin' Blue does a trick where
five songs in one.
Yeah, it does a trick where literally a minute and a half into the track, which starts out as like a bit of a rock instrumental, there's an audio cut.
I think it is the biggest about face in music history.
Yeah, right.
It is so stark and so unexpected.
Yeah.
Unsubtle. This is my favorite track of the album.
Really?
By 100 miles. I adore this song. But it took me about 10 years to get there.
Yeah. I was going to say.
It was my least favorite initially. And yeah, weirdly over time, I just grew to love it.
Yeah. I think on future listens, I will as well. But that stark cut where it literally turns into a different song. And I think this is part of my issue with it, is that at the time I'm listening to it, I like the first half so much more, and then the second half is so kind of funeral dirgy and stuff. But I have to tell you, listening to that snip right now where I've skipped 3 minutes into the song, I fucking love it. so I feel like I don't understand what the song is doing, I think.
I would implore, and I'm hoping everyone will be interested enough by this episode to go and check out, because we will do obviously a Spotify playlist of all the tracks in full.
Yeah.
Go and check out I'm on the wrong episode, I know. That's the main app. This is the Patreon one. Regardless, go check out this album on Spotify. Listen to the whole thing because it's fucking great. But listen to Screamin' Blue because you will never have heard such an abrupt change mid-song.
Oh, never, never.
And you will be looking at it going, has it gone to the next song already? You will never have heard anything like it. It's such a slap in the face.
Yeah.
And it's now brilliant.
The next two songs, obviously we get to Power and the Passion, which is, that's got to be their biggest hit, right? Apart from Beds Are Burning.
That or the one immediately
before that, U.S. Forces?
Yeah, U.S. Okay. Forces and Power and the Passion are the two monster hits off this album.
U.S. Forces is one that it was interesting for me because I didn't remember it. I didn't recognize it. And yet I was like, I know this song. I'm sure I do. And it is definitely, this is, when I said before that their lyrics are very punk, this is the one that most leans into that.
Oh, for sure.
This is a punk song.
From the opening note, it's like, bam!
Yes, this is a punk song. And I quite enjoy this one.
U.S. forces give the nod. It's a setback for your country. Bombs and trenches all in rows. Bombs and threats still ask for more.
You could imagine this song in a real London accent.
Yeah, you can.
US
yeah.
forces give yes. the nod.
And with more distortion, because it's interesting. Yeah. This is the one where they lean most into punk, even musically.
Oh, it could
it's
totally
that
be a punk
simple,
song.
Like choppy guitar.
70s Sex Pistols punk song.
Yeah, and that's why I actually quite like the choice that they've made to mainly keep that song acoustic.
Yeah.
Just kind of juxtaposes it a little bit. So I definitely think it gets stronger as it goes. My favorite track is the final one, Somebody's Trying to Tell Me Something.
Wow.
Yeah. And I really like those final three. I'm a big fan of Tin Legs and Tin Minds as well.
Apart from Screaming Blue, probably my favorite two are Marilyn and Tin Legs.
But by the time we get...
Somebody's Trying to Tell Me Something on.
Really? By the time we get to that final track, that's when I think I'm most on board with what they're trying to do. Not just as a band, but with this album, because it's really interesting. You know, albums have kind of died. They, you know, these days.
It's a concept, yeah.
People release a track on Spotify. Exactly.
No one cares about the flow of.
And this was
intended.
A really interesting listen to me, because obviously that's what we're doing on this show, is we're looking for the perfect album.
Yeah.
And even though.
I want to listen to the songs in the order the artist intended to take me on that journey.
And I think that's the thing. Even though I said that there's some songs I don't love, by the end of this, by the time you get to Somebody's Trying to Tell Me Something, I feel like I actually understand this album as a concept and what it's doing and why it is so stylistically different. And I think that that's why I like this song so much. Maybe it's not even that this is my favorite song. Maybe it's just that this is the point I hit that turn and go, yeah, this album rocks. There's just something I really like about this song. I love that chorus, and I love the instrumentation. I love the arrangement. I just really dig this song, and I think it makes the whole album, in hindsight, work better for me.
It is a good kind of coda. I think it's a good final song for the album. You did like Maralinga, though.
I do. Like I said, I think for me, it literally goes from 10 to 1. I think that the first couple of tracks are the weakest. By the time we get to those final three in particular, from Maralinga, Tin Legs and Tin Minds, Somebody's Trying to Tell Me Something, that run of three there is where I'm like, yes, I'm in. In fact, even Power and the Passion, I think, is a fine song. I think
it's a good hit. Yeah,
it is.
Really. I can understand why it's become one of their big hits because the chorus really fucking slaps.
Yes. But, you know, like you said earlier, this was at a time where when a song is a hit, you get inundated with it. And for a song like Power and the Passion, that never ended. Like when I was a young kid, right through to my teens, I remember hearing that song fucking everywhere. Yeah. And I think that... it's funny. That can almost ruin a song. Like there are some songs that I thought were good at the time.
I mean, it's one of the very few positives about the current age is that you don't really get that overplay.
Yes.
That killed many a great song.
Yeah.
Where people just got fucking sick of them because radio stations were just ramming it down your throat every second song. Looking at you, Triple M. But Maralingo, it's been getting a lot of play, weirdly, in the last couple of weeks because the kids have been I can't even think if it's the twins or if it's Ayla at high school. But they, probably it's got to be Ayla, surely. But they've been learning about Maralingo and the testing.
Yeah, right.
Because for listeners, the nasty Americans came and with our nasty Australian government decided to test atomic bombs in the middle of Australia where a lot of Aboriginal people went, fuck off, this is our home.
Yeah, yeah.
And Americans and the Australian government went, don't care, we're going to drop atomic bombs on you.
Yes, yes. It is, I don't want to get too political, but obviously we've got the vote on Saturday. I'm guessing you're voting yes.
Yeah, because I'm not a cunt.
Exactly. It's funny. I keep seeing on like Instagram and TikTok and stuff, it's like, know who you're voting with. And it shows the people who are voting no, and it's, you know, Pauline Hanson, Scott Morrison, Peter fucking Dutton, you know, complete Dutton.
Oh,
cunts.
My God, that fucking weird-ass reptilian alien. Asshole.
Yeah. No, yeah, so all in all, I liked this album a lot. Like, I know I alluded early on to the fact that maybe there were some tracks I didn't like, but again, I think this is a really diverse album, and these guys are much more talented musicians than I ever thought they were. Like, I always knew they were political, and obviously, you know, the big hits, but I kind of thought that they were like pop songwriters, really.
Kind of overshadows you. You kind of, they just get lumped into, you know,
yes,
Peter Garrett
they
as
do.
Well, as a performer gets kind of lumped in as, well, he's the guy that's always banging on about the environment.
Yeah,
and
dancing.
It kind of overshadows, and it overshadows what I think is a musically,
I have to agree,
pretty fucking good group.
I have to agree.
And I'm biased.
So
I discovered when I went into year seven, good old Sydney Grammar School, and sat down in my little wooden, you know, the seats we have with the fucking desk. In 1B, that was my class, and was told by the teacher I was sitting in. And I think his name, I think it's Rob Hurst who's the drummer, but the drummer from Midnight Oil sat in my seat.
Yeah,
was
right.
His seat in 1B. I sat in his seat. So from that point on, I was like, all right, well, I kind of like that. I kind of like the band now.
Yeah, so all in all, even though I can't say I loved every track on this album, I'm giving it an 8 as far as albums go.
Oh,
so I think this is probably, as far as albums go, one of the strongest ones I think you've given me. And it's hard. In some ways, that goes against what the ethos of this show is, because there are absolutely tracks I would skip. And yet, I just think it works so well.
That's the thing, though. I gave it to you because there's not traps, but there are not tracks that I would skip. It's never going to be the case that that's always the situation with the
100%.
Person that receives the album.
Yeah. Yes, I dug it.
Good.
I dug it.
Excellent.
Well, I'm gonna keep you with an Australian band this week.
Oh, cool.
In fact, I use the word band loosely. I mentioned last week about the Lost and Lonesome record label having their birthday party in Melbourne, and I've bought my ticket. I'm going. I'm very keen.
I'm still trying to work out if I can fly down for it.
But one of the people who is performing is a guy called Anthony Atkinson with his band Anthony Atkinson and the Running Mates.
Why do I know his name?
I don't know. He only released one album with this band, and I think he released one solo album prior to this. He's not performed live in about 15 years. The album I'm giving you is from about, I want to say, 18 years ago. It's called Broken Folks by Anthony Atkinson and the Running Mates. It's very, I mean, you know my style. You know, like I said, this record label is owned by the bassist from the Lucksmiths, so it's very
the record label,
twee poppy.
From what I've seen of it, is twee fucking city.
This is probably one of the least twee. I'd say that this borders more into folk, but with a very poppy edge to it. So I'm curious to hear if you like this one. I'm really curious. And I will be giving you more from this label over the next couple of weeks, because I've just been binging all of my favorites because I'm so excited about getting to see them. So it's reminded me of a lot of great albums. And
well,
I genuinely
throw them at me, because
yeah.
I'm trying to justify a flight to Melbourne just to go and see a fucking concert. And
but yeah, I genuinely think that this one has no skips. So there you go. I'm curious to see if you feel the same.
Bring it. There you go.
That's it from us this week. Thank you, patrons, for staying with us. We hope you're enjoying these. And this was fun to play the music in live this time. I felt like a bit of a DJ.
You're such a techno boy. I'm so impressed.
Well, let's go out on Maralinga. Oh,
just fly, the poison crown, the charcoal ground, and if you can't see the smile in me, that's where I wanna be. That's